I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for murders that defy explanation, mystery seeking exploration, and shocking secrets that will leave you breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops. And neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, indeed. I am joined this morning by Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Julie, good to hear from you again.
Hey, Danny, how are you?
I am doing quite well. It's kind of a fresh morning. I think that's
a bit brisk, I'd say.
I was trying to be diplomatic. And anyway, we welcome your lawn and garden questions, but especially, I tell you what, I'm going to leave it up to you because we have a special bit of help this morning, right?
We sure do. We have Maggie Ryder. Maggie is our new extension educator in TURF. She is she has been around Minnesota for a long time. And graduated from the University of Minnesota in turf science. And she spent a few years out in California, and she's back working for us now. So we are so happy to have her on the horticulture team.
Absolutely. Welcome, Maggie. Welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time to do this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So
very brisk.
Yeah.
That's a good word for it compared to California. I'm still getting used to it all.
Your blood will thicken up here in just a couple of weeks or so.
Yeah.
I want to alert our listeners that if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, especially a turf question this morning, since Maggie's joining us along with Julie Weisenhorn, call in your question or send a text. It's the same number, 651-989-9226. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you know we tend to get really busy. So if you have a question, again, especially about turf, your lawn, call it in or text it in. In fact, one just came in here in reference to lawns. Let's just get this underway here. My last lawn fertilizer, they say, the application, was August 15th. Will I be okay for the winter, or should I put on another application soon? That comes from Jeff in Maple Grove. What do you guys think?
Sure. It depends on, I guess, the number of fertilizer applications that your lawn needs over the year. If it needs a second application, there is still time to do that. Usually the cutoff is about October 15th. We don't want to be applying lawn fertilizer after October 15th because the grass just isn't growing in a way that would take it up. So there's risk of like environmental loss of the nutrients. But some lawns can get by with one fertilizer application per year. Some can get by with two fertilizer applications, like one in the spring and one in the fall. But higher input or higher maintenance lawns can use up to three fertilizer applications per year. So if you need another one, there is still time. But just please, do it in the next couple of weeks, to get the most out of it.
I know that, In my yard here, I've been trying to, where some bad spots have been over the last few weeks doing some seeding, but I'm gonna stop doing that now because I don't want, and you tell me if I'm correct, I don't want to start the seeds sprouting and suddenly it's November and they die, right?
Yeah,
and unless I start doing dormant seeding, right?
Oh, yeah. Wow. You should do the lawn question. So the latest for seeding would be up to like the second or third week in September, ideally. I mean, we can start seeding, I wouldn't even call it fall. It's almost late summer because we have such a short season here in Minnesota. So the best time to seed is like August 15th to September 15th. And then, at this time of the year, I would withhold, don't seed, and just shoot for the next sort of window is that November time of dormant seeding. And, some more information about dormant seeding here. The idea is you're putting seed down that's going to be dormant and not grow. It's going to stay cold under the snow, and then it's going to be ready to grow right away when the snow melts, and it's going to capitalize on that moisture in the springtime. And it gives you a little advantage ahead of weeds.
Absolutely.
So the best time to do this is, again, usually, second or third week of November.
Okay, good to do. I'll save it until then. 651-989-9226. Julie, let's see. Boy, they're coming in like crazy here. Here's one for you, Julie. Why are my dahlias so small this year?
It could be that the tubers that you're growing your dahlias from are aging and that they are not very robust to start with. It's also been a very odd summer for our gardens. We had that incredibly hot weather in June and into July somewhat. So it really stressed some of our plants. Another reason that bulbs might be small or bulb-like structures is that they get in the ground too late. And that could be something as well. So you might want to examine when you dig up your dahlia bulbs this year is to take a look at them, make sure that they're healthy, they don't have any damage or insect issues, they're not soft or squishy anywhere. Trim off those parts, discard those that just are not very robust, and then look to adding some new ones to your garden next year. And we do have some information on dahlias on our extension website, so you can take a look at that about when to plant those. People will start them in containers a little bit early and then transplant them as well.
And that website is?
extension.umn.edu, and you can go to the Yard and Garden page.
Excellent. Let's grab a phone call here. Tom is calling in from, I believe, Minnetonka this morning. Tom, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Thanks. First of all, my comment on dahlias, mine did incredible this year, but I started mine inside on May 1st. As a matter of fact, the biggest thing, this isn't my question, but I was wondering, my tubers now are so huge. Can I just plant those as a huge tuber next year, or do I have to split them up?
You know, I think that you can actually divide them, and that might be a way to propagate them as well. So, yeah, I think you could take you want to use a clean, sharp knife. I would sterilize it with some alcohol and then go ahead and just make a nice, clean cut next spring before you plant them. I think also, I take that back. I think you're supposed to let them actually cure a little bit, kind of form a little callus over the part that you cut before you put them in the ground.
Okay, my big questions are, I am helping out a friend who's moving and giving them a bunch of plants for my garden, but they're not moving until really late October. Is it going to be a problem to plant? They're pretty hardy things, like peonies and hostas. Is it going to be okay to plant them that late in the season?
That's the hostas, I would say, not a problem. And possibly the peonies, too. It's getting pretty late because the plants can't establish a root system. They can't kind of like nestle in for the rest of the year. It's really going to depend on our weather. If we have a really long stretch of warm fall, then you might get away with it. But again, hostas, I don't see a problem with that as long as the soil is, you know, workable. But the peonies, you could try that, or you could just wait. Usually we would divide those in the fall. So, yeah.
Spring's not a good time to transplant these at all, is it?
It's really later in the season. So you could take a chance with that, and then just maybe save some for next year too, and in the late summer, in August or so, then go ahead and give them to your friends.
All right. We need to take a quick break. We have more show to come. If you have any lawn or garden questions, especially one for Maggie, who is our turf expert from the University of Minnesota, call it in or text it in, 651-989-9226. We'll be back with more Smart Garden on News Talk 830 WCCO. And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Julie and Maggie from the University of Minnesota. We're talking about lawns and gardens, but if you have specifically a lawn, a turf question, Maggie's the expert there that Julie brought with her today. So take advantage of that. 651-989-9226. I want to get back to the phones, but a texter came in earlier that said, please tell us the difference between quack grass and crab grass. Maggie?
Yeah, crabgrass and quackgrass are both weedy grasses, and they're annuals, which means they die every year, and that's troublesome because, you know, that we don't have ground cover, which, you know, leads to problems like erosion control and, again, loss of nutrients. The differences between them, crabgrass tends to be a little bit lower growing, right? It tends to stay flat and persist more under our three-inch height of cut for lawns. Quack grass is a bit taller. And it doesn't persist as well under the low mowing heights. That's the main difference. And then quack grass spreads by rhizomes or underground stems. So you'll see from, maybe an individual quack grass plant, it, you'll start to see shoots coming out adjacent to it, and that's how it propagates itself. Whereas crabgrass just sort of has a flatter, form, and it kind of has stolons, or it just, you know, lays, the stems lay across the top of the soil surface, and it can kind of grow sideways and spread that way. Hmm. The seed heads are quite different too. Crabgrass seed heads look kind of like spikes coming out of a central spike, sort of like a hand, right? Where these three or four spikelets coming from a central point. And quackgrass has a different seed head that is more of a classic, I guess, a grass seed that has a, you know, just a tighter inflorescence, I would call it.
All right.
So, Maggie, I have a question about that. Mm-hmm. Because
yeah.
I've always understood that quackgrass, after you mow your lawn, quackgrass, like, grows faster than your lawn grasses. So when you're trying to treat it or determine if you have it, you can look across your lawn and see these kind of bunches of quackgrass poking up above your lawn. So that kind of helps you identify it so you can actually treat it. And I've heard it's super hard to get rid of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is very difficult because there's, you know, because it's a grassy weed, there's not a lot of selective herbicides.
It's a perennial here.
Yeah, it is a perennial.
Right. Yeah, that's what I thought. That makes it really hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we have follow-up questions from different listeners we'll get to. But you know what? We do have listeners on the phone, so let's see if we can't help a couple of folks. Connie, first up, you're calling from Minneapolis. Good morning, Connie. What is your question?
Good morning. Say, I have had trouble growing grass in my shady backyard for the last 4 or 5 years, I think. And I sent pictures to somebody from the extension online. He thinks I have rhizoctonia. And I've treated a couple times with the two different antifungals at his advice. I planted again in September, actually 3 times back there, and it still won't grow grass. Do you have any suggestions or thoughts on that?
Yeah, so rhizoctonia, you know, we had a terrible summer for turf grass diseases. That could have been an issue. But by September, our temperatures are cooled off, and we don't get a lot of disease issues through the fall. I would recommend trying to plant a grass that's adapted to shade. So grasses that are adapted to shade are the fine fescue grasses, and that's sort of a catch-all term for a group of species. And they are strong creeping red fescue, slender creeping red fescue, chewing fescue, hard fescue, or sheep fescue. Any of those five grasses are adapted to shade. And they, you know, that's your best chance at getting some vegetation in shaded areas of lawns.
All right. Thanks, Connie. Kevin, I believe, is calling in from Waseca this morning. Kevin, you are on with Julie and Maggie.
Well, very good morning to you.
Morning.
I have a question. It's a little bit off course to the subject of the day. I have 4 hydrangea plants, one in each corner of the house, probably 3 years old or so. And none of them bloom this year. A lot of foliage, but no blossoms. Any suggestions what happened?
Do you know what kind of hydrangeas?
I do not.
Okay. Do they have big round flowers that are white, or do they have more triangular shaped?
Big round ones, the 2 previous years had late in the year round blossoms.
Okay. And have you done any pruning on them? Like, have you been cutting them down? Have you been cutting them back?
I cut in the spring what appeared to be dead branches or shoots or whatever. So it was pretty much a little bit above ground level starting out in the spring.
Okay. And last but not least, are they new plants or old plants?
Again, I believe we planted them 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago.
Okay. And they bloomed well up until this year?
Yes, 2 previous years. And the thing of it is, they didn't seem to blossom until low into August, late in the year, you know. But this year, there was nothing on any of them.
So I think one piece of advice might be, you know, is to not cut them back. is to let those branches just be for the winter. And you might do a little bit of selective pruning if you've got some really, like one really long branch that's leaning over into your lawn area. You might trim that one back. Don't cut them back so far. And I would not cut them back this year. There's two different thought processes here. One is that some people say cut those. I'm going to say they're an Annabelle hydrangea. Let's just use that term because everybody knows what those are. That when you cut them completely down, then it rejuvenates it. But I think another school of thought is to not cut them down because it makes stronger branches. And so I think that I would not cut them back this year and see how they do next year. You might also make sure that they're mulched. You said they're on the corner of your houses, of your house. So if they might be in a garden bed, but if they're not, just mulch the root area. And be sure to maybe give them a tree or shrub fertilizer treatment in the spring so that they kind of start out with some good nutrition, the roots are protected and cool, and then they're starting with as much branching as possible. See if that helps.
All right, very good. Before we take a break and look at that forecast, here's a text that says, should I start pruning and putting hay down on my hibiscus? What do you think?
So this is a perennial hibiscus, and I would say that I would make sure that it's completely dyed back. In other words, all the leaves are off of it, and I would you could do the haying. I wouldn't do it this week because we're getting like 70 degree weather.
Yeah.
So when the weather is steadily cold, so I would say maybe in the 40s or even 30s, then I would say you could start to cover your plants. But right now it's too warm, and so you're not going to do it any good by covering it at this point.
Very good. Well, we'll take in moments here a look at that warmer forecast coming up, and then we have about another half hour of the show to go on our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on WCCO around every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Julie and Maggie from the U of M, if you have specifically a lawn question, this is your day. You can ask Maggie, who is the turf expert from the U of M, your question. And, of course, Julie is helping us out as she does so often here, and we're grateful for that. 651-989-9226 is the phone number. It's also the text number. We have a bunch of both. I'll tell you what, let's help out the callers initially first here. I think John has been waiting there at Dayton to ask a question. Thank you, John. What is your question?
Say, I'm looking for an apple tree called a NW Greening, and I've called 10 different nurseries, and I can't seem to find one. Can you help me?
I have not heard of that apple tree. That is a new one for me. Depending on where you heard about it, it could be a variety that is not hardy in Minnesota, or it's something that we just don't carry in Minnesota. We have a lot of great apple tree options that are university bred, as well as some from Wisconsin and nearby locations, but I don't know about that one. One resource that you could use to look it up is it's called the Plant Information Online. And it is available through the Arboretum website. It's plantinfo.umn.edu. That's the link to that or the address for it on the web. And this is a database that's managed by the Anderson Horticultural Library at the Arboretum. They spend a huge amount of time going through catalogs and other sellers, wholesalers and retailers of plant materials, and you can type in that name of that apple tree and see if you can find somebody who carries it. It may also be that that plant is available wholesale, but not retail. Some plants are just for orchard growers. So you could use plant information online at plantinfo.umn.edu. And take a look and see if you can find the plant that way. But that's a new one for me. Never heard of that one before.
All right. Here's one from Maggie, too. The texter says, I live in southwestern Minnesota. What and when do I treat my lawn for crabgrass? What's the procedure there? What time of year, first of all?
Yeah, crabgrass would be treated in the springtime. Before it germinates, there are pre-emergent herbicide options for that. And then if you, you know, don't get control, there is some post-emergent herbicide options as well. And, you know, if you're not comfortable with herbicides, honestly, your other alternative is to mechanical removal by hand. But this all needs to take place in the springtime. It's better to get the plants, you know, before they germinate or when they're very small. This time of year, there's no need to be controlling crabgrass because it's going to die anyway. So I'm starting to see it turn sort of, you know, purplish, golden in some areas in the metro because we had a frost a couple weeks ago that, you know, is hoping to kill it off for the season.
All right, very good. Let's go back to the phones. Karen, I believe, is calling from Eden Prairie this morning. Karen, thanks for waiting. You're on CCO. I'm sorry? Oh, Sharon.
Hello.
Okay. Loses a little in translation. Thanks, Sharon.
That's okay. Good morning. I'm going to be mulching my leaves, which is a combination of ash, river birch, and silver maple. Anyhow, I wanted to know, I would like to put that on, use it on my plants, you know, for mulch, and how, what depth is the right, without killing them or hurting them.
Okay. So good for you for using your leaves as mulch. That's a great way to make use of a lot of organic matter that's on your property. It creates a great habitat for our overwintering insects like queen bumblebees. And so it really creates a nice habitat for that. It's protective. It's warm. It also breaks down eventually and really improves your soil around your plants. And it holds in moisture like mulch does and also will keep plant roots protected. So it's a really great way to use those leaves. As far as depth goes, you really can't. It depends if you're going to leave that, those leaves on in the through the spring, which I would recommend on your soil to as a mulch. But you know they're going to collapse down a great deal, so you can't. I don't think that there's a specific depth. Ultimately, in the end, you would want the leaves to maybe be about 2 inches thick. And so that's after they break down, probably end of next year at this time, you would be able to determine if that's the right depth. And in the spring, as plants are coming up, you know, sometimes if they're buried, they'll be kind of a white, pale green color because they're not getting any light. It's just to go around and push the leaves off of those plants. And so as your hostas are coming up or other plants in your garden, just push them aside. Push those leaves down into the areas underneath the plants, around the plants, so that you're actually, you know, you're using it as a mulch, but then you're allowing the plants to, you know, to get some sunlight. So that's a great thing. That's exactly what I do in my yard. So, and it works really, really well. I've done it for years.
All right. Let's go to back to the phones. Ron is calling from Minneapolis this morning. Then we'll grab some text messages. Ron, thank you. You're on CCO.
Good morning. I was wondering, what is the latest this season that we can aerate, or is it too late?
Yeah, this is a good question. It's almost too late. If you could, again, this is sort of an October 15th cutoff, you could aerate in the next couple weeks because the turf, it'll grow a little bit and be able to sort of recover from that. It's too late for cultural practices like dethatching. Like dethatching tends to be pretty aggressive. And we usually try to keep that wrapped up in September or so because the grass is just, it's not going to have a chance to recover from that cultivation through October. But there's still time to aerify in the next couple of weeks.
All right.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Ron. Appreciate the call. We're getting a lot of text messages as far as lawn goes is how short do I mow it? So let's talk about the growing season. What's a good length? And then should you cut it really short or shorter as we head into winter? What do you think, Maggie?
Yeah, this is a great question. Thank you for bringing it up. I am constantly advocating for people to raise their mowing heights try to shoot for like 3 or 3.5 inches because longer height of cut is going to provide a better, healthier lawn that's going to prevent weeds, have deeper roots, all the good stuff that comes with that. However, there is one time of year as we go into winter, sort of so we're winterizing our lawns and our landscapes, where it'd be a good idea to lower the height of cut gradually. And I mean, so if you're mowing at 3 inches, gradually lower your height of cut down to 2 or 2.5 inches, you know, over the next few weeks to your last mowing, which might be the end of October, early November. And the idea here is we want to reduce some of the leaf material that's there, because less leaf material is going to mean less vegetation there for snow mold disease over the winter times. So if we can lower the height of cut, lawns that are cut a little bit shorter in the last few mowings are going to have less snow mold disease in the springtime when the snow melts. It also does help reduce habitat for voles running around under the snow too. But again, sometimes I'm cautious about telling people to lower the heights of cut because, again, in the springtime, remember to please raise the height of cut again.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's really made a difference in my lawn over the years, thanks to the information we got from people like Julie and Mary. And I'm looking at these other here's one. As Julie would tell you, Maggie, that maybe we should have a contest and who asked the first Creeping Charlie question.
But I knew that was coming.
Here's what it says. I have two neighbors' yards that have Creeping Charlie. I've been spraying my side of the fence. Is there anything I can do to keep them from getting into my yard? What's the process for Creeping Charlie here?
Yeah, this is one of our worst weeds in most, you know, FAQ how to fix weeds in lawns in Minnesota. Well, it sounds like the lawn manager is controlling it on their side with herbicides, which is, you know, that's effective. As far as preventing it from continuing to encroach onto your property, the only thing that's going to stop that is like a physical barrier. I mean, like, you know, some type of stones or, you know, put in some type of mulched garden area just to separate the lawns. To prevent that Creeping Charlie from having the continuous, you know, sort of ground cover that will allow it to keep growing. And I also say, too, in general on Creeping Charlie control, we have a very, very good blog post. I think that's co-authored by Julie here on our extension website. So if you go there, you know, search for Creeping Charlie, there's a really comprehensive webpage that includes all possible control options and just some good commentary on Creeping Charlie in the landscape.
That's a great resource anyway.
Yeah.
extension.umn.edu. Check it out. We'll mention that, of course, like we always do before we take our leave this morning. Julie and Maggie, hang on. We'll take another quick break here. We'll grab some more text messages here on News Talk A30 WCCO. And welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Thanks to good folks like Julie Weisenhorn, Maggie Ryder, Turf Expert. We're talking, got a lot of questions, which is not a surprise, I guess, when Julie told us that Maggie would be joining us this morning. Lot of lawn questions. There are two of them that are referring to moss in not only their home here in the metro, but in their lake home area up north. Maggie, what do you think about moss? How do you take care of that if you don't like it?
Moss, this one is tricky. Moss and algae both are, they're indicator weeds, right, of a lot of moisture and shade. So there's a reason that the moss is there. It's because that area or that microclimate has too much moisture, too much shade for grass to maintain, continuous cover. So the first thing I would say to try to correct some of these underlying problems, you know, make sure if you have an irrigation system that you're not overwatering. If you have heavy shade, you know, could you potentially prune trees or shrubbery that's providing the shade or increase airflow? But as far as, you know, that's really, you know, the only solutions that I can think of. Maybe Julie has something to add, but try to correct the reason that the moss is there.
I think one of the things, too, is to think about if it's even a good location for grass to grow. And we had an earlier question about shade, trying to grow grass in shade. And while the fine fescues are terrific grasses for that, if you need to have grass in that area, say you have children or you need a play area or there's some reason that you want to have grass there. But also consider that maybe it's a good place for a shade garden and you could remove all of the moss and the grass and then mulch that area and interplant it there with shade perennials. So that can reduce some of your maintenance on your lawn, but it can also reduce the kind of headaches that you have with some of these areas that are really tough to grow grass.
That's great. Thanks, Julie.
Here's a tree question. Pruning. Can I prune my oak, maple, and elm trees now? I have many to trim, and I don't want to try and get it all done in the snow.
Yeah, so you can. You want to prune a little bit if you need to. It's really best to wait to prune anything right now until the plants are dormant. So plants will gradually move into dormancy. They'll drop their leaves. That's why we get this great fall color. And they will basically slow down their growing. And when they get into dormancy in the winter, there's no active growing going on. There's no insect issues. There's no fungal diseases that are happening and flourishing. So it's a great time. I know that it's hard to get out to the trees to do that. But if you can wait until they go dormant, until they're completely dormant, that would be the best. That allows the plant in the spring to recover quickly, and because it's actively going to be growing as soon as the temperatures warm up and the sun, you know, is longer in the sky. So I would say hold off if you can, particularly for the oak trees. Right now we're in a low-risk time for oak wilt, which is a devastating disease of oaks. And so I would hold off. The best time to prune your oak trees is when they are completely dormant. So I would wait if you can. I know that it's kind of a hassle, but maybe make it a party.
There you go.
Have a bonfire.
Yeah, that's right.
Prune your trees.
Be careful. Make some s'mores. Okay,
yeah.
Let's see. There's a hosta question. I know we talked about it a bit this morning. But the texter says, I was told I could transplant hostas until the ground freezes. Is that true?
Well, hosta is one of those plants that it is tough. I've had hostas that have sat out in a bucket in my garage all winter with no soil, and I planted them the next spring and they grew just fine. So if they're very robust, yes, I guess you could transplant them. I can make no guarantees. But they are pretty tough landscape plants. It's one of the reasons that people love them so much. They're really a hands-off kind of plant, and they produce these incredible foliage and beautiful flowers. So, yes, you could still transplant them at this point, I would say.
Okay. Boy, here I can relate to this one depending on the year. This texter says, most of our yard is covered under a canopy of oak trees, and this year is very heavy with acorns. It's difficult to rake them all. How hard should I work to remove them, or will they just break down?
Go ahead, Julie.
Go ahead, Maggie.
I would say, I think they would just break down. What, you know?
Sometimes they're so thick, though. I mean,
yeah. This is a problem my mom has up in Moose Lake where my parents live, and they have constant acorns dropping all over the place. And some years, as we know from masting, which is when the plants produce a huge amount of seed, they can really be a headache. And you know what I would do with some of those is I would get out my shop vac, and I would use it in the difficult areas that are hard to rake out, like cracks and spaces, you know, around your walls and things like that. And I would suck up as many of those as I could. And the other option is then you have to just rake the bigger areas. So, and just you'll get some of them, you'll get most of them, not all of them, but it's just a, you know, oaks are really valuable trees, and don't not plant oaks because of the acorns, because they're very valuable. But yeah, they do require a little extra work in that respect. I'd suck them up with the shop vac.
Here's the other side of that Creeping Charlie coin. Will my Creeping Charlie overwinter well? I use it for organic tea. I've heard that before.
Yeah, it will overwinter just fine. It's a weed, not a problem.
All right, here's a text that says, is it too late to move a clematis from a pot into the ground? If so, can I overwinter it inside, and how?
Oh, this question comes up every fall because of people grow perennials more and more in containers and for various reasons. You could try planting it now. I would say plant it right now and give it some good water, mulch the roots, and you might want to even pile some leaves around it just to protect it, because it won't have the ability probably to reestablish its roots. Again, I can't predict the weather. We have a nice stretch coming up now, so it's a good time to do these kinds of things. If you have a garage that is around 45 degrees or so, 40 to 45 degrees, maybe you have a space heater in there that you just fire up when you're working in your garage. That's what we do at our house. You can overwinter it as a dormant plant. And this would mean just putting it into that garage in a space where it's out of the way, watering it maybe once a month just to keep it from completely dehydrating. And then as soon as you can work the soil in the spring is to plant it. So you can try that. And the last thing you could do is you could bury it, the whole pot, in the ground out in your garden and cover it with leaves. And then in the spring, dig it up and then either put it back in a pot or put it in a different pot, or you can plant it in your garden at that point. So there's it's a little trial and error.
Okay. This texter lives in Plymouth and says, I have a walk behind mower. I've noticed this year as I mow the lawn, it seems it's very bumpy. What can I do about that?
Yeah, we get this question occasionally. So, you know, if the bumpiness is, I guess, just natural from this, you know, the soil moving or freeze and thaw cycles, sometimes it's from earthworm castings. And in that case, again, I don't have a great answer, but you know, the earthworm castings and the bumpiness is really a nuisance thing. It's not affecting the turf grass health. Some things you could do are try to top dress, you know, with compost, or sand. If you could get a heavy roller in there, you know, that's what they would do at on a golf course or a sports field, something to roll over these areas and try to smooth it out. That if you do that once or twice, that wouldn't be too harmful, to the grass. But yeah, that's challenging. Yeah.
We have a couple minutes to go. Here's another one. It says, on Wednesday, we had our yard aerated and grass seed put down. How long do we have to wait before we can walk on it and go across the lawn again with the mower?
It depends on what grass seed was put down, like what species of grass. They have different times that it would take to germinate and, you know, have seedlings big enough to strong enough to walk on. Usually I would say 2 weeks. That's a kind of an average of all the different potential grasses that could be out there, but 2 weeks should be okay.
Okay. How about, texter says, some peony roots I was just given. What's the best plan for those?
I would get those in the ground right away. As we talked about with the earlier caller who was going to give peonies and hosta to his friends who were moving, you'd want to plant those immediately. You could overwinter them in some damp peat moss in a plastic bag. You could try doing that so that they don't dehydrate. Keep them in a cool location, about 40 degrees. The refrigerator works for that. Separate from food, keep them out of the area. But you could, I would say, get them in the ground right now and be sure to plant them at the proper depth. Peonies are very fussy. They do not want to be planted any deeper than about an inch and a half.
All right, we have about a minute to go. As Julie will tell you, Maggie, we have the smartest listeners. Remember that apple tree that we questioned earlier?
Yeah.
Question about this? This gentleman says things that Julie's obviously too young to remember this, but it's the Northwest, the apple is referring to an old apple called Northwest Greening. Northwest,
right.
Something to look up. Well, thank you for that.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
We are just about out of time. And Maggie, it's great great to have you on the show. We hope we can do that a lot more often here on our Smart Garden Show. Great
We're
job.
We're glad to have her on board.
Absolutely. The turf expert. You will hear her again here on CCO. And Julie, why don't you give us the website for the U of M, just a great resource.
Sure. It's extension.umn.edu. And you can go to Yard and Garden. We also have a great search engine, so you can type in a question or a topic or a word, and it will come up with all sorts of information, not only from our web pages, but also from our Yard and Garden News, which is our comes out twice a month. It's actually constantly changing and updating with current information for your yards and gardens.
Oh, yeah. It is a labor of love. Julie, Maggie, thank you so much. Let's talk soon again.
Thanks, Denny.
Okay. Thank you.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.